You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Look like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
You are listening to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features conversations with and the music of local musicians and traveling musicians performing in town. I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with violinists Nick Kendall and Charles Yang, and bassist Renan Meyer of the ensemble Time for Three. Time for Three will be performing this Saturday, January 17th at 7:30 p.m. with the Savannah Philharmonic at the Lucas Theater for the Arts in Savannah, playing Contact by Kevin Putz. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Nick Kendall, Charles Yang, and Renan Meyer.
How are you? It's great to be here.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Well, let's first talk about each of you. So to get the audience to know who the three of you are. So why don't we start with Renan? Tell me your musical journey. How did you become a bassist?
I think for me, you know, the bass really kind of came as a secondary instrument because at the time I was a singer as a young person. And throughout my journey, I would quit a lot of the instruments that I would play. But my parents are from a musical background. So they really sort of engaged me constantly, as good parents will do or patient parents will do. I wanted to be a singer and I wanted really to do musical theater. And when I was about 13 years old, Mother Nature played that cruel trick on what most boys go through, where my voice was basically stripped from me. And it was extremely frustrating. And I didn't have necessarily a vocal coach at the time to sort of hold my hand through that process and give me certain ways to navigate that journey so I could come out on the other side with some sort of a voice. So really, I found the double bass as my avatar to express myself. And it was daunting at first. I really wanted to quit all the time. It was big to carry around. But after 4 years of my parents kind of, you know, holding me at gunpoint to the instrument, I finally fell in love with it through a language, the complex language of jazz, which gave me a responsibility as a bass player to really hold it down and keep the band together. I felt kind of like the glue, if you will. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. And that's where I really found my passion. And then I really never looked back.
And so did you take private bass lessons or did you sort of just learn on your own?
I did. My mother would have a bass teacher come every week, very patient man by the name of Boris Blumenkrantz. And he would come every week. And my dad was kind of wondering why he was coming to our house, because I would basically pick up the bass for the lesson for 45 minutes and then put it down. And then a week would go by and I'd pick it up again and follow suit. And my mom said, be patient, be patient. And he was just, you know, full of joy, immigrant that just came here with the double bass and maybe one suitcase and just had the love for classical music. I remember him just like laughing at some things I would do, but not laughing at me, just laughing in a sort of endearing way, like, oh gosh, this is so cute. And then after about 4 years, when I found myself loving something, this incredible bass teacher by the name of Douglas Mapp, who played jazz and classical, was able to kind of rein me in and get me organized. And all of a sudden I was practicing on my own.
And then you continued your studies?
I did, yeah. I studied a lot of jazz. Bass teachers like Rufus Reed and Todd Kuhlman, classical teachers like Neil Courtney, who spent 50 years in the Philadelphia Orchestra, Rufus, who played with everyone. And then I really wanted to be a jazz bassist. Got into the Manhattan School of Music because I wanted to study classical with Tim Cobb, who's the principal of the New York Philharmonic. At the time, he was the principal of the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. And I wanted to get my chops up through classical music so I could really be empowered to play jazz. But little by little, I started to fall more and more for the language of classical music, and pretty much everything else that was out there, that it led me to wanting to audition for Curtis Institute of Music and study with the principal bassist of the Philadelphia Orchestra, Hal Robinson. And Hal was just amazing for me because beyond being this like heavyweight teacher that produced so many incredible double basses, he also personalized his approach. You know, he just wanted me to become the best me. And that was really a crucial part of my training.
So Charles, what's your musical journey?
I'm from Austin, Texas, and my mother's a violinist. She's actually still in the Austin Symphony, but she went to the Shanghai Conservatory and was part of the Cultural Revolution in China, moved to the U.S., went to Texas, and had me and put a violin in my hands at age 3. So I keep saying this, but I've never remembered a time without the violin, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, it's just something I did all the time. My mom made me do it. I didn't love it until around the age of 10 or 12, around that time when I started jamming with my friends, played guitar or bass or drums, and they'd ask me to come jam with them. And at that point, I had learned a lot of the concertos and the core classical rep, and I didn't know how to improvise. So I would get there and they'd ask for the music, and they said, we don't know how to read music. So here's the pentatonic scale. And they taught me how to play the blues. And that's when I was no longer practicing for my parents. I was practicing for myself. And I was interested at music at that point. That kind of sparked my curiosity. In high school, I joined choir because the cute girls were in choirs. That was the first time I was singing every day at school. So that also sparked my joy of singing. And then went to Juilliard and was the weird kid, you know, going to Juilliard and doing all these things. Everybody there was pretty much core classical. Of course, we had the jazz department, the acting and dancing, but I was always wanting to collaborate with these different people from different backgrounds of the art form. And so it never seemed wrong, although at the time it was different. And then I joined with these guys 6 years ago. I joined with Time for Three, and we just get to be weird together. So it's a beautiful thing.
And so as you were learning the classical repertoire, was it your mother that was primarily teaching you?
Oh, yeah. She was very conservative in terms of violin. It was classical music. Again, like by the age of 10, I'd learned a lot of the major concertos and going through that kind of route. And in my mind, it was just something that I'm very grateful for. She taught me the rep, but I was curious for more.
And I presume as you were going out and then jamming with your friends, you made it very careful when you returned home not to refer to your instrument as the fiddle.
Yeah, I think in Chinese, it's the same word. So I was clear there. It wasn't exactly accepted. Not that it, you know, I think it's just my parents didn't understand. They didn't grow up with the music that I was listening to at the time, you know, classic rock, Pink Floyd and the Beatles. But slowly they understood that he's not just doing this to be cool or for the looks. Maybe it started that way, but he was really starting to love it and learn it. They could tell I was curious about it and wanting to get better at it. So, and still to this day, they're slowly being more open to it, you know, and being proud of it.
And when you went to Juilliard, was that pretty much the classical rep, or were you able to branch out there as well?
Yeah, at Juilliard, went for classical violin, studied with Glenn Dictorow, who's my hero still, and kind of like an uncle to me. I just saw him a couple weeks ago. And just to have a huge icon like that, someone you looked up to, but also the industry looks up to, be so supportive of what I did in college. He knew I was into all these other things and being so supportive then, but being so supportive now of something new, something that we are just so inspired to do, to push the art form forward.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with violinists Nick Kendall and Charles Yang and bassist Renan Meyer of the ensemble Time for Three. And Nick, what's your musical journey?
Well, I started a couple of years ago and just ended up here, moving on.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I learned mostly from YouTube. It's similar to the other guys. I mean, I think, you know, we can really relate to each other because we come from musical families. And I mean, even though there's so many really successful and amazingly creative artists that we know who come from non-musical backgrounds, but for the three of us, we did have that commonality. Music for my parents, for my sister and myself, was a positive activity, especially for me, to kind of harness my energy. If I was one of these kids that couldn't stay still in one place longer than 1 second. And so I think the whole notion that music can be an application to my broader curriculum of what I'm learning was a mechanism for learning other things through music. I was very lucky that I had my grandfather as a really big inspiration. From the earliest age, I started when I was three and a half. From the earliest memories I have is of my grandfather leading literally hundreds of children in group class. And I remember the children laughing so openly and having such a great time, but yet really focused on the music. And my grandfather, this character. My grandfather was one of the pioneers of the Suzuki method. Coincidentally, my mom is from Japan, so I'm half Japanese. Dr. Suzuki started the method in Japan, and my grandfather went over there, but it's actually my Caucasian grandfather that went. And my Japanese side actually really had no idea about Western music at all. They're very much focused. They come from a very small village, rice village, outside of Hiroshima, and they just kind of knew the Japanese heritage music, really. And my grandfather once said that the only kind of understanding of violin was through the black and white Shogun movies or samurai movies, where a lot of times, and interestingly enough, those Japanese movies, instead of having a shamisen or regular folk instruments as the soundtrack, it actually was a Western orchestra. But otherwise, my family was very much into Japanese tradition. And the Suzuki method was able to harness my energy by, there's so much imagination and fun and games when you're learning with a wonderful teacher. And I had many wonderful Suzuki teachers. But here's the trick. I wasn't allowed to do the fun and games until I could play in tune, the right tempo and the right. So it's this freedom comes from discipline sort of mentality. And I think it was really kind of at the root of how I feel like I fit into this incredible band, that it is so much of what we do comes from the imagination, from hearing, like Renan was saying, hearing music as a language, but then applying everything that goes into when you're studying the great masterworks, but also connecting that with your desire to connect with people through your music. And that's exactly what Time for Three does. And you know, I got into Curtis still playing in folk bands. I had a bucket band that I played on the streets of Philadelphia on the weekends. I remember the summer before I started my first semester at Curtis, I was playing out on the corner of 18th and Walnut Street, which is a block away from Curtis. And it was my friends and I were playing. It was four of us. And we had this huge crowd. And then in the middle of the crowd, I saw Gary Grafman, who was then president of Curtis, and my teacher for many years, Victor Danchenko, who was, of course, one of the most successful, well-known descendants, I guess, from David Oistrakh. And I was totally scared. But they were smiling, and they each put in a $20 bill into the bucket. And I was like, that was such a big win. And then, of course, next week, I had to play Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto well. And then he kicked my butt. But anyway, so it was this wonderful duality of worlds and experiences and really trial and error. But this common denominator being that I always loved music and never quite understood where I fit into any one place. But music was always a way for me to communicate and was always a way to bring me together with people. And I'm just really thankful that I had a great family and a great tradition to kind of stand on by going to Curtis.
Well, and it sounds like that at Curtis, you had a traditional classical training, but you had the chance to play on the streets.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was, Renan remembers that when I was at Curtis before Renan came, he came the second year. And I remember before Renan came, I had I'd been setting up my bands from the restaurants that are right outside Curtis just to play for people. And I actually started putting a string orchestra together for brunch at a really fancy restaurant down the street. And of course, you know, coming from Curtis, the restaurant owners and managers, and of course, in that area, a lot of supporters and board members at Curtis started hearing about all this and coming. And I was just always wanting to disrupt and put energy in unexpected places. And I love those moments. And when Renan showed up, I heard about this other dude in the bass section who's a jazz cat. And he, after orchestra rehearsals, instead of going home and studying, he went to go play jazz gigs at Ortlieb's, which I don't think it's around anymore, but it was one of the most famous spots to play for jazzers, and Chris's Jazz Club. And I go there, and I had probably one of the most inspiring memories being at Curtis, outside of the Curtis walls, encountering this energy from Renan. Usually the bass is in the back of the band and very much accompanimental, the glue. But Renan not only was the glue, but he was the personality and bringing everybody together. And I was just a fan and sort of wanted to connect and make music with him. And we did.
Well, there seemed to be a theme developing here. Your eclectic interest in music, very broad range of music, classically trained, but interested in jazz, beginning as a child doing combos and doing bands and string bands and a variety of other types of performances as well. And so was it the fact that the three of you were geographically together and musically in sync? Is that what gave rise then to Time for Three?
One of y'all take a stab at this.
In the generation, or I should say the years that Nick and I came up in classical music, there was like a lot of nervousness to try something outside of the classical genre. I think 10 years later, Charles, you could speak this better, but my feeling is that there were more in your college years when you were coming up in high school years, still not a lot, but there were more that were open-minded out from the classical genre. And, you know, now there's even more than those two periods combined. It's been a new thing that's coming on more and more. And I think, you know, if you take it back to the, if we get a little heady for a second and we think about the fundamental and how classical music in general, generally speaking, is taught, it's very quickly getting to the music, to use the music as your source, meaning the sheet music or the score, et cetera, you know, your part. And then that part, you then take from that part and those words, and then you start to interpret that music. And I think, you know, with a lot of other genres in music culture, the sheet music is not as involved at a very early stage in the process. And it's more about getting to the instrument without anything in between. When you put improvisation into it, or spontaneity in music making, just like you put your instrument in your hands and you just are like, go ahead, make some music. We're eliminating the notes on the page as a step in the process. And what I find, you know, this is my take on this. What I find a lot of the times that when you have a musical opportunity where you don't have those notes in front of you that you have to look at, but you're just able to make that sort of physical, emotional connection right away with the artist, then it's a different thing. There's a different type of energy that takes place, no matter what the genre, or the style, or the styles of music is or are. What I find when I make music with Charles, Nick, and I is that there's this constant engagement to get to that energy as quickly as possible. So we can sort of metaphorically, you know, rip up that music and throw it in the trash so we can kind of get to this connection with each other. So whether that happens at age 5 or it happens at age 55, fundamentally, to me, that's one of the very crucial elements in Time for Three's existence. Whether we were a band called Time for Three or we were individuals gravitating to this planet called Time for Three, that's a fundamental of why we've been able to get to where we have.
This is WRUULP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the American Traditions Collection of Concerts, including the American Traditions Competition Week, featuring 24 of the top singers from around the country from February 16th to the 20th in quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals competitive rounds at Victory North, 2603 Whitaker Street, Savannah. More information and tickets are available at www.atcsavannah.org. The Savannah Philharmonic's Tchaikovsky Fifth Concert is on Saturday, January 17th at 7:30 p.m. in the Lucas Theater for the Arts and features, in addition to Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, the ensemble Time for Three, performing Kevin Putt's Contact. More information and tickets are available at savannahphilharmonic.org. This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I am talking with violinists Nick Kendall and Charles Yang and bassist Renan Meyer of the ensemble Time for Three. Time for Three will be performing this Saturday, January 17th at 7:30 p.m. with the Savannah Philharmonic at the Lucas Theater for the Arts in Savannah, playing Contact by Kevin Putz. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Nick Kendall, Charles Yang, and Renan Meyer.
Well, that's a perfect introduction then to move on to Contact, which is Kevin Putz's concerto, because the wonderful thing about Kevin's piece throughout is it's almost like counterpoint with the violins and the bass sharing the melodies back and forth. And that constant movement of the melodies back and forth in terms of an integrated whole. And you see that throughout this whole piece.
And it's so cool for the listener. I mean, for the players, for us, when we were learning the parts, of course, we got our individual parts to practice. And then we got together and realized, oh, my God, this is one big line that's just being interspersed.
Whenever we play together, the three of us, we're always molding in the moment and flexing things. And just knowing how well we can do that with the whole entire orchestra.
And there's voice at the beginning and at the end of this first movement called The Call. How did that get in here?
Kevin came to at least three shows, right, guys? At least three shows of ours. And in Time for Three's existence now, we're a singing group. We write songs, we're singer-songwriters. And he just saw that as another color that he could paint. In his words, he was trying to figure out how we started in unison on an E, and then it branches out into a chord, and then it branches further from there. So his idea was, how can I start something in unity and let it grow from there? And that's exactly what he wrote for us with the vocals. And then the theme is further realized later by us in the orchestra, so returns at the end.
And it's also another example of a composer asking us what we wanted, which is amazing. But I think it was by design, because I think we know ourselves enough to seek out a composer we know will be able to leverage this opportunity. Because for us, there's just wonderful opportunity to try new things. And it also is really important that it's something that feels really natural for us, but not at the expense of what Renan said, which has been really key, which is pushing us. But it's sort of like Renan's teacher. How do you push, but in the direction that Renan needed to go in, or push in the direction that most makes sense for Time for Three? And one of the things that we said, and we talked about it, is wouldn't it be amazing and unexpected, you know, to come out a cappella singing this beautiful theme that then gets picked up by the woodwinds, that then gets kind of repeated. And then, of course, at the very end, the last movement, a lot of people don't realize this. In the live concert, they will. But the theme that we sing at the beginning, the whole orchestra sings in unison about 30 seconds from the end. They sing the theme that we sang at the beginning, but as a choir on stage. And it's so on many levels, we were able to kind of create this narrative together for Time for Three. And it's really cool.
My other reaction to Kevin Putt's Contact, again, it's in four movements, the call, codes, which is a scherzo, contact, and convivium. And each of these movements is a completely different sonic world. I found that just amazing, because you go from this sort of rich, I'll use the word quartet, because it's the three of you plus the orchestra, working with this rich sound world. So how did you respond to these completely different musical environments when you first saw the piece?
I think with Contact, that's one of the things that's fascinating to me, because what is it, 23, 24 minutes total? Man, it's in within a blink of an eye, just from beginning to end. Kevin talked about just recently in another interview, he was saying that where a lot of composers will find a climax, something like a hook, so to speak, and then they write to support that hook. And he writes from beginning to end, and he just lets his imagination take him on this journey. And to me, that's what this is like. It's almost like the piece is being created in real time. And it feels like that when we perform it, when we record it, it has this just like fluidity and organic nature where it just goes from start to finish. And I think regardless of the scenic changes on a visual level and the sonic differentials, you know, and complementary elements on an aural level, it's just got this way of moving. And it really, for me, it helps the imagination to be provoked and even evolve. Maybe each time I hear the piece, the last movement, it's from Genki no Horo. It's actually from this folk melody, Genki no Horo, which is a Bulgarian dance. And it's in an odd time signature for North America, but it's not an odd time signature for Bulgarians. And I think finding that flavor and groove and not thinking in terms of 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, you know, it's not thinking like that, but more just kind of getting in this feel of the lilt and the dance with it. And almost find, you know, Genki no Horo, in a wonderful way, it adds to the character of that quirkiness. You know, it's like some sort of a celebration, and like we're all sort of together. And it's a great way to end a concerto, because togetherness is a great way to celebrate the end of a concerto.
It's a party.
Actually, it was Kevin Putz's son, Ben. He was playing this in a cello group, playing this Genki no Horo, the actual Bulgarian folk tune, in his cello class. And Kevin was drawn to it and decided, how can I make this into something in this concerto? And he did. He implemented that theme. And it makes so much sense. You know, the idea of Kevin's concerto is about the greater beyond and the greater unknown. So what a way to take it back home after all this third movement being how he describes as this kind of vessel lost in space, just floating in space and just emptiness. And to finally take it back home in the last movement of humanity and just culture being sent out into the greater unknown.
Codes, which is the scherzo, he suggested that it was a message.
Totally.
Like a message in code. I don't know if he mentioned this to you before you started working on it, or what sort of influence does comments like this have in terms of your performance of it?
Definitely, we spoke about what is the narrative of this piece. And before the pandemic, this project was supposed to come together. And in the season of 2020, we were supposed to premiere all this stuff. But of course, the pandemic kind of pushed everything back. And it's weird to say this, but we actually did have a gift of time where we actually decided to get deeper into the piece. And at the same time, all of us were apart. We were away from our beloved audiences and the familiarity of routine of going to a dressing room, getting ready, doing sound check, and then doing a show. And all this stuff was gone. And the three of us were not together. And Kevin was apart. So, and we were also, as a country, we were dealing with so much, and we were seeing so much death also from around the world. So the idea of contact, missing contact, the human element, but then also the idea of hope, the idea of that we can always strive for better. And this narrative with being apart started playing into this idea of this being really inspired by space and everything that it means. So codes definitely got tightened up over the pandemic as being these little things put together. If you looked at all three of our parts individually, there are sets of patterns, but then you put them all together and then you look at the whole score, it all just kind of fits together. And of course, you know, you hear it. And then you hear it when we all play with the orchestra. And then that came into the idea of the third movement. The third movement, Contact, is Kevin had this idea of maybe a lost ship out in space. But then he kind of came up with this beautiful melody that really could be the soundtrack to 2001 Space Odyssey or something like that. And then the idea of Covivium was, again, the idea of Earth and the idea of, you know, let's end with a party, let's end with community, which is something that Time for Three is all about. We feel like we build community through our art. And it's just a way to kind of bring it all home. So it's very intentional. This was all very conversational with Kevin during the whole process, and absolutely has an effect when we play this. Thank you.
And then you go into the codes, which is a scherzo. And of course, my mind was still in acoustic Americana. And so I have hoedown written here. But it's very dance-like. It's very quick. And these great pizzicato passages and strumming and slap pits and all that as part of this movement. And then Contact is a complete shift again into more of a, I guess, I don't know what the marking is, but it seems like more of an andante with, the, again, this rich, gentle, maybe even tentative piece of music. Thank you. And then in Convivium, you get back into the rich groove. But the groove changes because it almost seemed modal. You know, like I was hearing some sort of Middle Eastern or Middle European music in there as part of the dance numbers.
Thank you. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have had violinists Nick Kendall and Charles Yang and bassist Renan Meyer, who are members of the ensemble Time for Three. Time for Three will be performing this Saturday, January 17th at 7:30 p.m. with the Savannah Philharmonic at the Lucas Theater for the Arts in Savannah, playing Contact by Kevin Putz. And I want to thank you, Nick, Charles, and Renan, so very much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate you. It was a pleasure.
Best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, man.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week. Well, I know we have-